Welcome to Quadriga. Sabers are rattling once again in the Middle East as a standoff between the United States and Iran intensifies. The Trump administration has sent an aircraft carrier to the Persian Gulf and is updating war plans over what it says are Iranian threats to American troops and interests. This follows Iran's announcement last week in response to tighter U.S. sanctions that it will partly reduce its commitment to the nuclear deal unilaterally rejected a year ago by Washington. Iran also issued an ultimatum to the remaining parties to the agreement, giving them 60 days to find a way to keep trading with Iran despite the U.S. sanctions. Could U.S. pressure produce a new and better deal, as Washington claims, or will it result in war? That's the question we pose on this edition of Quadriga, and here are our guests who will answer it. It's a pleasure to welcome Tori Taussig. She's a political analyst for the Brookings Institution, currently on a Robert Bosch Fellowship in Berlin. She says tensions between the U.S. and Iran are escalating. Signals coming out of Washington and Tehran indicate things won't cool down anytime soon. And we're very glad to have Shayan Arkyan on the program. He is a political analyst and on Iranian and Shia affairs. And he's editor-in-chief of Iran Anders, a German language magazine specialized in reporting on Iran. He says Europe shouldn't see Iran only as a threat. Rather, it can win Tehran as a partner. And it's a pleasure to introduce Rick Nowak. He's a Berlin-based correspondent for The Washington Post, who covers international politics. And he says both sides know that a U.S.-Iranian war could become more catastrophic even than the Iraq War. President Trump could have few firm allies at home for such a confrontation. So I'd like to start out by trying to figure out if these drumbeats of war that we're hearing are in fact leading to that, or whether they're simply scare tactics on both sides. And for that purpose, I'd like us to listen to some sound from both parties.
What they should be doing is calling me up, sitting down. We can make a deal, a fair deal. We just don't want them to have nuclear weapons. Not too much to ask. And we would help put them back into great shape.
Negotiations with the U.S. are poison as long as the U.S. is what it is and has not come to its senses. Talks with the U.S. are poison, and with its current administration, it's a double poison.
So, Tori Taussig, you said in your opening statement that things won't cool down soon, but Trump is hardly sounding there like he's ready to go to war. And the fact is that he was elected in part on his assertion that he would bring home U.S. forces from the Middle East and not intervene anymore in that region.
That's exactly right. President Trump campaigned in 2016 on bringing troops home from the Middle East, ending America's costly wars in the region, and also withdrawing from the Iran nuclear deal and renegotiating a better deal with Iran's leaders over not only its nuclear weapons and its progression of nuclear weapons, but also its destabilizing activity in the region. The challenge is that there are hardliners in the White House that have a very different objective when it comes to Iran, and that is pushing tensions to the point where we are today.
That, I think, requires us to talk a little bit about those hardliners. Rick Nowak, in your opening statement, you mentioned the Iraq War. Well, the fact is that one of the chief architects of that conflict is now the National Security Advisor to President Trump, and we're told that Iran policy is absolutely in his hands. So what are the implications of that? Let's say the president doesn't want a war. How does John Bolton feel about it?
Well, John Bolton certainly has been advocating for military options, potentially, or at least a very strong stance against Iran. But it is unclear to what extent Trump actually agrees with that assertion or with that stance. We have actually been hearing over the last few hours today that Trump has been quite opposed to some of the statements he has made.
Shayan Arkyan, you say that the U.S. can win Iran as a partner, but if we listen to that soundbite from Khamenei, it doesn't sound like he's ready for any kind of discussions. And haven't, in fact, hardliners in the regime in Tehran been gaining sway in recent months?
I have to correct it. I said that Europe can win Iran as a partner, not the U.S. At the moment, the relationship between Tehran and Washington is too complicated for such a perspective. But you said the hardliners Iran, but I think in this regard, we have not really have hardliners in Iran, because if you look at the presidential or parliamentary elections, no politician in Iran demand to have nuclear weapons or to pull out from the deal. So what we're now seeing is, let alone the so-called hardliners, what we see is that even the reformist or centrist in Iran want pressure the centrist government of Mr. Rouhani to increase the uranium and to suspend some obligations until in the JCPOA.
I want to come back to that in a moment, but can you just say a word about the latest U.S. claims regarding Iranian threats to U.S. forces in the Middle East? We are seeing reports today that the U.S. says it has credible evidence that missiles have been loaded onto small boats in the Persian Gulf and that the Revolutionary Guard, the hardliners in Iran, are behind this. Now, in April, the Iranian parliament declared U.S. forces in the region terrorists. Isn't there some good reason to be concerned in Washington about what the implications of that could be?
I don't think so. It depends on the international community. If the international community can help Iran to evade the sanctions, at the moment, Iran it's not a moment that Iran has nothing to lose. If one day Iran has nothing to lose, then it can, for example, block the Strait of Hormuz, where significant oil shipping happens through the straits in Persian Gulf. But at the moment, I don't think that Iran is interested in military conflict. And I also think the U.S. is also not interested in military conflict, and this what we see in the last days, it is more psychological warfare measures to prevent investments and business in Iran, because no businessmen want to deal with the country when there's a fear that tomorrow or the next days there will be a war.
Let me ask the two of you how you interpret these U.S. claims about having new and credible evidence of a qualitatively higher risk. And Tori Tausig, you mentioned the hardliners in the White House, John Bolton. Certainly everybody remembers the evidence that he and others presented in the run-up to the Iraq War. Is that what we're seeing here, a similar situation, exaggerations, or do you think this is more credible?
To be honest, it's a little hard to tell what we're dealing with here, because it did seem to appear somewhat out of nowhere about a week ago. We had a scheduled visit from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to Berlin, which was called off at the last minute so that the Secretary of State could travel to Iraq to meet with counterparts there to discuss what the administration said were credible threats of Iranian proxies planning an attack on U.S. resources and military assets in the region. We then saw a very quick movement of U.S. military assets to the region. And all of a sudden, we're in this tit-for-tat moment of escalation between the Iranians and the Americans. And yet, when U.S. officials such as Mike Pompeo have tried to make the case of credible evidence to European officials, it's been met with increasing skepticism.
Exactly. Rick Nowak, Europeans definitely pushing back on this point. Even a British general saying yesterday he doesn't buy the evidence he's seeing.
And that is quite remarkable. As you know, Britain is part of the Five Eyes alliance partnership. And clearly, a dispute over evidence, the U.S. claims could potentially justify military strikes and potentially a war with Iran, and a U.S. And a U.K. Official denying that. That is quite striking, and I think that is not going to help the U.S. make its point here, in Europe especially, but also in other countries.
Meanwhile, Shayan Akian, Iran is saying that it will no longer comply with the limits on production of enriched uranium that were part of that nuclear agreement that the U.S. And the five permanent members of the Security Council, together with Germany, all signed up to. So what exactly does that mean? How quickly can Iran rev up its nuclear program? Are we now in imminent danger of seeing it essentially restart its bomb program?
First of all, let me say that this measure is intended by the JCPOA. The JCPOA gives the right to Iran to...
JCPOA is the name of that nuclear agreement,
yes,
just for
exactly.
our viewers. Yeah.
give Iran the right, or other participants the right, to withdraw its obligation if the other part is the other party do not commit its duty. And Rouhani tells this measure is not to... not to destroy the agreement, but to rescue the agreement and put the ball in the court of the international community, especially E3, but also Russia and China, to find a mechanism to evade this illegal unilateral sanctions.
Okay, and we will come back to the sanctions a little bit earlier, but let's take a closer look at this deal, at this JCPOA. As you said, that at the time it was signed, Trump's predecessor, Barack Obama, called a historical triumph for diplomacy. The deal was signed in 2015 after 13 years of wrangling. The five permanent members of the UN Security Council on the one side and Iran on the other agreed that Iran would cease activities that could result in nuclear weapons production and allow robust monitoring and inspection in return for the lifting of crippling economic sanctions. Europe, Russia, and China say Iran's made good on its commitment under the deal so far. So, Tori Tausig, what exactly is it then that the U.S. is objecting to?
So if we go back to the 2016 campaign and President Trump's criticisms of the Iran deal, he said time and time again that this was a poorly negotiated deal. It was done and acted against a rogue regime and that Iran had no interest in maintaining its end of the bargain. President Trump vowed to renegotiate this deal, said that it was going to renegotiate a deal to focus on Iran's destabilizing actions in the region in addition to its nuclear program. However, if we go back a year ago, just over a year ago today, the United States unilaterally withdrew from that deal, saying that it could, again, renegotiate a better deal with Iran. What it did not anticipate was that the Europeans and the Iranians would both stay in the deal and try to make good on, again, Iran putting off its nuclear ambitions for reduction and relief from sanctions. And so the U.S. has been, I think, increasingly isolated in its attempt to try to get Iran back to the table to renegotiate a better deal.
So, Shahin Arkian, among the things that the Trump administration accuses Iran of are threatening U.S. interests in the Middle East, as we talked about, the idea the missiles on the boats in the Persian Gulf that could perhaps be aimed at U.S. forces, encouraging aggression by Shiite militias in Lebanon, Iraq, and Syria, shipping missiles to Houthi rebels in Yemen, and allowing Iran's naval forces to behave belligerently in the Persian Gulf. It's quite a long list, and it's by no means fiction.
I don't think that, for example, if you see the case of the Yemen war, Iran has so much high role in regard to the Houthis. Even the State Department told before the war that the Iranians told the Houthis do not invade Sana'a. So this is very overrated, the influence of Iran on the Houthis and on the Yemen. Saudi Arabia knows that Iran has no lobby in West and often use Iran as a pretext to legitimize its policy. And it does not also do Saudi Arabia. There are many other countries that legitimize its policy by taking Iran as a pretext. And if you comparing, for example, the role of Saudi Arabia in the region and the role of Iran in the region, I do not see that Iran's role in the region is really destabilizing. I see it's rather Saudi Arabia's role. Saudi Arabia supported the IS. Saudi Arabia take the Lebanese prime minister hostage and pressure him to step aside. So I think the only problem between the West or Iran is the case of Israel, and if you want to solve this problem, we have to make peace between Israel and Palestine, and then Iran can't do a damn thing.
So, Rick Nowak, the Europeans have said essentially, the nuclear deal contains Iran's nuclear program. And if we bring Iran out from the cold, if we reintegrate them into world markets, if we reintegrate them into international diplomacy, that eventually we'll have levers to work on these other destabilizing behaviors that I listed there. The fact is, you could say, given that geopolitical situation in the Middle East with this head-to-head rivalry between Saudi Arabia and Iran, wasn't that pretty naive to think that we were ever going to see Iran cease that kind of behavior?
Well, you could argue so. And in fact, for people critical of that deal, the evidence has been terror attacks or killings in Europe blamed on Iran over the last few months. Now, there isn't any evidence really for that, but some have claimed that this sort of indicates that Iran won't stop its behavior, and in fact, it might feel emboldened by the fact that there's more money, there's more economic prosperity. But the Europeans have been quite calm and stuck to that agreement, not even really commented on those attacks or those killings in Europe, to try to at least give it a chance, at least try it out if it could work. And that's the reason why they've set up, for instance, a clearinghouse to facilitate trade between European companies and Iran, even after the U.S. pulled out of that agreement.
If I could just add to this very briefly, I don't think that there were illusions on behalf of the Obama administration that Iran was a good actor in the region. And all of the malign activities you mentioned were met with clear eyes by Washington. This Iranian nuclear accord was meant to deter Iran's nuclear ambitions, and that in itself. There was a lot of criticism within Washington and elsewhere at the time that it didn't address enough of Iran's destabilizing activities in the region. But again, this deal was meant to deter Iranian nuclear ambitions. And what I worry about now is that we are back to a time where we have two potential paths. One, Iran kind of restarts its nuclear processes. Or two, we're in a point of heightened tensions of confrontation between the United States and Iran. Both of these paths, the deal was meant to avoid in the first place.
Noak, let me ask you about one aspect of that, and it goes back to what Shayan Akian said about this historic rivalry between Iran and Saudi Arabia. The U.S. has now positioned itself very, very firmly on the side of Saudi Arabia. What impact does that have on these tensions with Iran? Is that one of the reasons we're seeing things heat up now? And what consequences do you think will come of that?
Well, certainly it does send a message, especially after the Khashoggi killing and the war in Yemen, that the U.S. still stands by Saudi Arabia. It sends a message not only to Iran, but to a lot of other actors in the world. But I think in terms of Iran specifically, yes, it does embolden Saudi Arabia in a way to get tougher on it. And
do you think Saudi Arabia wants hot war with Iran?
I think nobody wants war necessarily at this point.
What do you think? Hot war? Saudi Arabia?
We see also the late moderate King Abdullah demand from the U.S. to attack Iran, as WikiLeaks leaked such documents. And it's not new that Saudi Arabia and Israel always tried to push U.S. To a war against Iran.
So let us talk briefly about where things go from here. And as I said earlier, the incentive offered to Tehran in the nuclear agreement was sanctions relief. But over the past year, the U.S. has reimposed sanctions, tightened them up, and now threatens to tighten them even further, including both minerals and steel. Let's take a look.
After oil, steel is the second lifeline for Iran's economy. Now this sector, too, must fear for its future. Nearly 2 million Iranian citizens work in the metal processing industry.
It's not just me. Everyone's worried. We're just praying it all comes to a good end because everyone's being hurt by the sanctions. It's affecting everybody.
The U.S. isn't only sanctioning Iran, but also any foreign company seeking to do business there. This is why more and more firms are now leaving the country. This has dealt a critical blow to the economy. In the past weeks, prices have doubled, making fruits and vegetables unaffordable for many.
The prices have been going up, so we need to adapt. Rents are skyrocketing. We've been saving on food.
As poverty grows, so does the people's anger with the U.S. and Europe. This could strengthen hardliners in Tehran. Could further sanctions force Iran to its knees?
Shayan Akian, what are you hearing from friends and relatives in Tehran, in Iran, about the situation there?
Signs are imposing of the U.S. unilateral sanctions. The economy suffers high, and we see, for example, the price goes high 45% comparing to previous years. The inflation rate is approximately 40%, but we should not have illusion because Iran has 40 years experience in evading sanctions. Yes, the sanctions hurt Iran, but it will not bring Iran to the knees. Iran will waiting what will come 2020 in the next U.S. presidential election.
There's basically two definitions of bringing Iran to its knees. One is whether a prolonged hardship would possibly cause the population to rise up, promote resistance against the regime. And the other one is whether it would essentially force the regime to make concessions. You're saying neither?
Neither, because if you also look at the rise of the University of Maryland, you see since the sanctions, the people in Iran do not like more to have negotiation with the U.S. The thesis, if we compromise with the U.S., if we give more, the U.S. want more, becomes popular. And the people know that this suffering comes from the sanctions. In the past, people think it was to a high percent mismanagement, but no, it's not the case more.
Tori Tosic, Tehran has issued an ultimatum to the remaining parties to the nuclear deal, but especially to the Europeans, demanding that they find a way to evade the U.S. sanctions and trade with Iran in a meaningful way within the next 60 days. Any chance that's going to happen?
This ultimatum puts the Europeans in a very difficult position in terms of what to do next. It either can continue to do business with Iran and try to make this deal stick, or it can decide that its business with the United States is too important and let that kind of financial tie between Iran and Europe fade. If Europe does so, I think Iran has within its power the interest to develop closer relations with Russia, with China, to look elsewhere outside of this Western multilateral framework for economic and financial relief.
Could Russia and China really pick up the slack to the degree that Tehran is clearly hoping?
No. I mean, if we look at the economic bite of these sanctions just over the last year, international estimates said that the Iranian economy was already going to shrink by 6% over this year. And I really do think that there is this deepening economic bite within Iran in which it needs Europe to comply by the terms of the deal in order to get out of this economic catastrophe.
Rick Nowak, the Europeans took a pretty extraordinary step this winter. They created a new payment system to try to create essentially a space for European countries to trade with Iran without having to go through U.S.-based payment systems. In itself, a pretty extraordinary step vis-a-vis an ally, the U.S., but apparently it hasn't worked very well. Is there any chance that this could be expanded and made really substantive in the next 60 days?
Well, that's a really good question. It is a highly interesting experiment that, frankly, is being watched very carefully by diplomats around the world, frankly, because it does come down to what you just said, the U.S. and the dollar as the dominant currency, and there's no way around it. It is, however, questionable whether it is going to have an impact that could preserve that deal, because the Iranians have gotten very frustrated over the last few weeks that it's still not really up and running. And a lot of companies have pulled out, and it is uncertain if they would be willing, especially if you have a major company, a global company, to risk being part of this and lose a U.S. market, for instance, or sanctions.
Right. We're just about out of time, but let me come back to the question posed in our title. Let's jump ahead. 60 days. Ultimatum has expired. Our title was Deal or War. Where do you think we'll be?
Neither nor, because if you look at the history of U.S. wars, you see that the U.S. always only attack countries that was weak by war or civil war. Look at Libya, look at Iraq war, Afghanistan war. And Iran has a huge capacity of retaliate, because I don't think it will come to a war.
The best thing we can hope for is for the Iranians and the Americans to come back to the table and talk to one another in the next 60 days.
Rick,
we might still be in the same position we're in today, really. Yeah.
Thanks very much to all of you for being with us. Thanks to you out there for tuning in. See you soon.